Hello, everyone. Welcome to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. I'm your host, Willie Morales. And on today's show, I have Sri Latha, a multifamily investor in the San Francisco area of all places. We always talk about high net worth areas like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York, but Sri is definitely doing something there. So Sri, how are you? Thank you so much for being on Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Will, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Were you always an entrepreneur as a youngster? I mean, you don't look older than 21, so.
I'm 36, but okay. Yeah, thank you.
So were you always an entrepreneur? Was real estate something that you always wanted to get into, or that like fell into your lap?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think that I had an inclination towards real estate even when I was young. I grew up in India. I didn't grow up here. And I moved here right around 22-ish, when I was 22. So when growing up in India, like I did see empty land. And I remember driving with my parents, and whenever my mom saw an empty lot, she would say, "Wow, I wish we could build a house here." It never happened for them in their generation, but it was always a thought process that was put in my head that, you know, there's some value to real estate. And my mom always also said, like 30 years later, she looked back at a piece of land she thought she wanted to buy, and she would bring it up. So I always knew that, you know, she had regrets around not investing in real estate. And so that was always kind of an undercurrent. But when I moved to the US, it was very straightforward. I came here to study, and I, you know, picked up a job right after. Okay. I'm a data scientist by training, by education. I studied economics and statistics. Right. And I went on to work a regular like corporate job in the Bay Area. That always helps to get your feet kind of grounded, because you now have an income, you have some savings, you have all of that good stuff. And right around the time my husband got sick in 2010, where he was diagnosed with a disease called rheumatoid arthritis, he literally went to work one morning, and by afternoon he couldn't walk anymore. Yeah, it's one of those things where it just like something flipped, and we sat at the doctor's office, and basically she said, you know, he might be disabled in 5 years.
Right.
And so it really hit us like a ton of bricks, and we knew we had to figure out a way to get ourselves financially secure if that was our eventuality.
Right.
But it turned out over the next 5 years that we were able to kind of reverse most of his disease symptoms and manage his disease kind of at this point in his life. He got about 80-90% better in the next about year and a year and a half after that. Okay. And so that helped us a ton. And then we still had that fire, though. We still had that fire of, we need to do something, and we need to generate passive income. And of course, like, there's a zillion ways to do passive income, but we were very clear we wanted to do real estate because it seemed very simple, right?
Right.
You rent out a piece of real estate, somebody pays you, you've experienced it, because we were renters this whole time. So we've experienced it, and we knew that, you know, it was very simple. And we could execute, if we could figure out how to execute on it, it would work for us, and it was truly passive. So we started saving up money, and then around 2012, 2013, I started to like research apartments and how to buy them and all of that good stuff. I started like most people in the single family realm, but what I did do, and I guess one of the things that came out from my training, is that I always like to put the numbers on a piece of paper.
Right.
And on an Excel sheet. So once I started to do that, I started to see that as I added more units, my cash flow was getting better and better and better. Mm-hmm. And I actually drove to a property in 2013, and I saw that it was like three units in here in San Jose, and it had some extra space for adding another unit. So I put that into my Excel spreadsheet, and I saw, wow, the numbers like really do start to make more sense as you buy more.
Right.
And at that point, we didn't have a single family. I mean, we had no assets. Like, we had no primary home. We just had money sitting in the bank. And we decided not to buy a house because we said that's a bad investment. And we're looking to get passive income, so we need a investment property.
So you didn't do the single family. I mean, but that was your intention, was to buy a single family unit first, single family house. But you saw that with the numbers working, that multifamily, the three unit worked much better. Because if we look at it, like from your point of view, if somebody leaves, you still get 2/3 of income still coming in.
That's right.
So with the savings, that's, you funded the property that way with 20% down and then you got the mortgage. Was that how it worked for you guys?
Yeah, similar. So we did not know enough, but what we found out was, so we had decided, okay, once we decided to buy more number of units, we said we need to buy out of state.
Okay.
Because California still does not make sense for the amount of money we had. We had about $200,000 at that point.
Okay.
And so we said, let's go buy out of state regardless. And we had some money over $200,000 for, you know, like cash reserves and all of that stuff as well.
Okay.
So we actually zoned in on Dallas and Texas. And so we bought in Dallas, we bought 12 units for $725,000 in 2014. And those were 12 units and we were able to get those with conventional financing. So Wells Fargo funded it, but we had to, and we ended up putting almost 30-35% down. On that property, because it's your first time, it's commercial, it's the way they underwrite the, you know, the deal, and you as an investor is different. So your first financing is always a little harder, but once you get that ball rolling, it starts to get easier.
Okay.
And we didn't know that till we were in contract, to be honest.
Right. Okay. So, okay, that's a great point. So instead of investing in San Francisco for your first deal, you went out of state. Now, a question that will come up with, let's say, some of my friends or colleagues is, how did you guys go to Dallas, Texas? Or did you find a team out there? Did you have family and friends? How was that transition working for you? Because they always say you need to have boots on the ground. So how did that work out for you?
Yeah. So I think it definitely taught us how to truly be passive.
Okay.
To be an out-of-state investor. We did also, thankfully, because we bought 12 units, it put us in the bracket where everybody you're dealing with is an investor.
Okay.
Right? When you buy single family, your realtor is a single family realtor, your property manager is a single family property manager. But once you put yourself in that space of being in the commercial space, our realtor was a commercial realtor. He referred us to a property manager who does this for many, many investors.
Okay.
So it became one of those things where I think there's a quote that says the A teams recommend A players.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened with us. We found a kick-ass, like really good property manager who would do the renovations also, or who would oversee the renovations. They had a contractor they already worked with. So it became like almost like a seamless way to do the renovations on this property. And that's part of our strategy.
No, but okay, so that's good though. You made the phone calls, you got recommendations, because that saves you a few hundred bucks, maybe a couple of thousand dollars of traveling back and forth.
Yes, we did travel too.
Oh, you did good.
Yeah, many times. But we only travel as we get closer to being in contract or we are already in contract.
Okay.
So then it's not time wasted. You're there, you already decided on the price, and then we show up.
Okay. So you funded it obviously with your own personal money. So if somebody is new that wants to get into the real estate realm, now they don't have that type of money saved up, would you recommend that they partner or would you recommend that they start small and work their way up? Like as an experienced investor, what would you suggest?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big proponent of learning it yourself and not partnering before you know what you're doing.
Okay.
For us, that was our biggest fear, is that what if we lose money and what if we brought a friend on the deal? And that would be a problem. But if you have somebody who's that close to you, who you trust and who has the same vision as you do, and that's the most important part really, that they really want to, they align on the vision of what you're trying to get at, then yes, partnering is a great way to do it. Otherwise, I would still just start smaller and build up from there.
Right.
But not single family small. Okay. I really don't recommend single family. I have to be.
So maybe like a duplex or a triplex.
Yes.
And then, okay. That's fair enough. Because not a lot of people really say that. They just try to say, oh, no, you could do 12, 20, 30 units right away. But I think, like you said, you have to get to education. And we'll definitely touch base on that because you do have a multifamily educational program that you offer people, right? So let's touch base on that in a little bit. So tell me about the fix and flip side of the apartment. So how does that work?
Yeah, so I mean, we were, even though we started out wanting passive income, what we recognized was doing those renovations gives you a huge bump up in equity as well as your rents. So it's both, right? So
Okay.
you not only get higher cash flow, you also, by because of the higher cash flow, your property is now valued more in the commercial space. Because in
Right.
when you're operating in the commercial space, your the property's income is what determines the price.
Okay.
Has a well, it's not the only thing, but it has a huge it's a huge component of the price of your property. So
Well,
you
you
could have.
value adding in the apartment basically because you're adding new appliances, I'm assuming,
We're
new
doing,
paint job. Yeah.
full renovations.
Right.
So we try to buy into a market where we know that this property has, say, 20 or 30% lower than market rents. And then we do the renovations on top of that. And then we get a bump up for of a couple of hundred dollars.
Right.
And so, for example, the one in Dallas was about 700 when we bought it, the one bedrooms. And
Yeah.
then after we were done, they were about 1,050 a one bedroom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we're looking at $350 in upside per month after the renovations.
So, and talk about how did you find this deal? Like, it was through a realtor, and how did you find the realtor? Because obviously, again, let's say me looking in. That's what I would like to know. Like, hey, how did you find this deal? How did you find the realtor? What kind of
Right.
networking did you do?
Yeah, so I mean, finding the realtor, the one thing we didn't know, or at least intuitively knew, is that unlike single family, the realtor, you're not really tied to the realtor,
Right.
right? If the realtor brings you a deal, they got your money, they got the commission. That's really the fundamental difference between operating in the residential space and the commercial space. So
Right.
we pretty much found properties that we thought were potential deals. And we would just call the realtor who was the listing agent. That's really all we did. But we didn't hesitate to pick up the phone and call. And once you start calling a bunch of realtors, you start to understand who seems to know their stuff, who seems to have properties of their own, who seems to have sold in that area, who has a property manager already, and how do have they done other renovations before, and all of that good stuff. So, and if they seem to know their stuff, then you kind of stick with them. You have to also be very clear in your criteria. You do not want to give them an impossible set of criteria that they can never fulfill. And you don't want to come across as someone who doesn't understand the market. So both of those things are on you as an investor to watch the market enough, do the numbers, do the underwriting to know when a deal is a good deal versus not, and to also understand to not give your realtor an impossible set of criteria. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to add value, if you're going to do renovations, then today's rent really is not that important. You get what I'm saying? A lot of people get stuck up in trying to, or stuck in, sorry, stuck in trying to find the best deal, right? But the truth is, if you're willing to do the work and if you're willing to do the renovations, you don't have to try to find the needle in the haystack type of deal. There are plenty of deals, even that those that are on the MLS or on LoopNet, where this kind of strategy can work.
I'm glad you touched base on that issue because I'm always hearing, and let's talk about also CoStar a little bit because LoopNet, you always hear, and I'm talking about from my point of view and the people I'm around, don't use LoopNet because those properties are like last on the list. But obviously, you see it differently. So let's talk about LoopNet and CoStar. Why would you recommend those two platforms for, let's say, new investors, even more seasoned investors? What is it about those two platforms that you see that you like?
So LoopNet is essentially the Zillow or the Redfin of the apartment world. So if you're looking at buying five or more units, which is what is considered commercial, and then your best bet really is to look at LoopNet. LoopNet is free, and they give you all the active listings. Now, LoopNet was bought by CoStar a couple of years ago. Think of CoStar as the parent company, and CoStar bought LoopNet, and they took away a whole bunch of free features. Okay, that's essentially what happened. So now all LoopNet has is just the available deals that are for sale right now. They took away any columns, they took away any data associated with past sales. And now that's exclusively available only in CoStar. And CoStar is essentially a paid for service that most brokers have to buy to get the access to that license.
I see.
And those, it's a data heavy platform, which gives you nationwide access. So you can look at any market, apartments that have sold, they have phone numbers in there, they have property details in there, all kinds of things. But it's kind of a huge database of information that you can cut and, you know, look at it in any way, shape, or form that you want.
So going backtrack a little bit to the Dallas, Texas market, was how did you decide that was the best bet for you? What data did you look at? Was it through CoStar / LoopNet? Did you say, hey, Dallas is a good cash flowing market? It's a growing city, you know, jobs are available.
Yeah.
Was those are the criteria that you look for in any type of out-of-state investment?
Yeah, so for out-of-state, I try to keep it simple. And I'll be honest, when I first started, I did not have any sophisticated like way to evaluate. I pretty much looked at population growth, job growth, and I wanted to make sure it wasn't one employer or one industry that dominated the market. Really, that's all there was to it. I also just Googled top 10 multifamily markets in the
that's
U.S.
Great.
No, so and great. When I saw those same cities come up, I kind of picked one from that. Because I honestly, truly believe that the deal economics need to make more sense than the market economics. Like if you're doing simple buy and hold and you're really not doing any work, then the market matters. It really matters because if your rents are not going to go up or if you need to refinance your property and you don't, and you've already bought kind of where the market's at, then the market does matter. But the moment you decide you're gonna do work, right? You're gonna increase the equity on your property. You're gonna increase the value of your property by renovating, by bumping up the rents. If you're choosing to do that, then you know that you're gonna have say $100,000, $200,000 in equity by the time you're done with all the renovations. So why worry so much about the market as long as you do some basic analysis to make sure you will get the rents at the end of the day?
And you touch base on a one industry town because as you know and I know and other investors, like Michigan, it seems like they always get hit because it's an auto town.
Correct.
You know, now they're trying to get different businesses in, but yeah, you're right. And I've heard this always for years and years, like if you're going to go to a out of state and you're going to do multifamily, make sure there's more than one type of industry in there. So obviously doing that type of research helped. So now for the new investors that are afraid to invest in a Dallas or San Francisco, because it's a high market town in terms of the phone, the prices look like phone numbers. What would you suggest for the newbies though? Especially if, in a high cost living like New York City, San Francisco, LA.
Yeah, so there's three big strategies that I've used in the high cost of living markets. All of them do involve money. So one, my recommendation, save up more. If you're truly stuck on working in these markets, you do need cash. So I don't want to falsely give people a sense of you can work in these markets with a very thin margin. Because in real estate, the only time you really lose is when you've lost your property, right? You cannot make your payments anymore. That's when you've truly lost. So in order to hold on, you do need cash. So if you're finding that you cannot invest in your local markets, either save more or find a market where you're not so razor thin on your cash reserves or your margins. So that's my honest, true to God recommendation for people who are starting small. And if you truly have no money down, because I do hear a lot of people pitching this stuff, right? Pitching the no money down stuff. But I want to tell people, and I always tell people in my coaching program this as well, no money down is a job. So at that point, it's no longer investing. What you're doing is you're finding another job to do that happens to be in real estate.
Right.
Because you are finding deals, you are talking to sellers, you are, basically doing all the work that probably a realtor would do or a wholesaler would do. And those are the three things I recommend is either a wholesaling, work as a realtor, or work as an apartment syndicator.
Okay.
Those are the three options for people with no money down. But if you have some money, try to get into a market that you can afford. And if you still think, no, I really want it to be local, I want to be able to go to my property, then start saving up a little bit more and see if you can buy something in your local area, even if it's small.
Right. And it's a start, right?
Yeah, because I assume if you live in a high cost of living area, I don't want to assume, but you do have to up level your investing to match your cash machine to match your investing, right? Because most of these high cost of living areas do pay higher salaries, so you got to figure out a way to match that cash, incoming cash, to the investing cash, and that's always the case with real estate. So you can be a wholesaler, where you put a property under contract and you sell it with, you just push paperwork basically to another buyer, and you keep the spread in between. Mm-hmm. So you can still do that, but it's still a job. I acknowledge that it's a job. You take that money and then invest that in real estate. So I still, and that those spreads are bigger in the high cost of living area markets. So you are operating all around with a bigger margin, whether it be a higher paying job that you have or a wholesaling job that you have. You have to start asking for more money or working with larger spreads, and that will enable you to start investing where you are locally.
And you know, it's funny that you say that, because I always hear, especially when I go to networking events, that the new investor wants to get into wholesaling. So definitely you just gave them, at least to me, an incentive like, hey, you know, you could do this. You push paper, you sell the paper, but make sure you got the spread that you could just build. And also, which nobody really says until you said it, it is a job because you get paid and then you got to wait until your next deal, because it's not like a passive income.
Right.
So has what's going on in the world today with the pandemic, has it affected business in any way? And if it has, what have you done about it? Or what are you looking to do in the future once this pandemic, you know, God willing, disappears?
Yeah. So about the pandemic, one good part about being in these high cost of living areas is that if those markets are not directly hit. So for example, I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're mostly technology driven. Technology was not one of the markets that was directly hit by COVID. Okay. So because of that, all of our tenants have been able to make payments, and we've not seen any major changes yet. But there are also eviction moratoriums, given that we are a state that is highly rent controlled, in California, similar to New York as well.
Yes.
So there's potential dangers, but we have not seen any of those play out just yet. And the good thing about having financing in place and having a good equity buffer and having cash reserves is that you can operate on once you've had those things in place, those are your safety nets. The other thing I wanted to mention also is, because we're rent controlled, the moment a tenant moves out, you can now bring that unit to market rents. If you have a one bedroom that's renting at $1,000, but it's actually in the market worth about $2,000 a month in rent. Now, if somebody decides to move out or default is a different scenario, but if somebody chooses to move out, then you can now renovate that unit and put it back on the market. So it's not such a bad thing to have a couple of vacant units, because the job market still continues to be strong.
Well, that's good. Okay. I mean, yeah, San Francisco is definitely a monster to itself. So I wanted to touch base on a couple of things. You have a project that you're working on about turning a hotel into a multifamily unit. Can you explain that conversion and what kind of permission you needed from the city or from the government? How did you work that? That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, last year, my husband and I sold a bunch of properties last year, and we were looking to find a strategy that was similar in terms of, I look for a widespread. Okay. Right. I look for equity in the property when I'm done. I don't just look for cash flow. I also care about cash flow, but I look for equity when I'm done. So I look for properties where I can do the work. I'm happy to do the work as long as I have that upside. So that brought me, and I met a very interesting woman here actually in the San Francisco Bay Area who buys a piece of land and converts and gets it entitled for building a hotel.
Okay.
So when I met her, that kind of really made me think about repurposing any piece of real estate into something else that is more valuable. So I started to, I pretty much went to the city hall or planning department and started to ask a bunch of questions like, how can I do this? Like, and I found an example property where maybe this was already done. Not exactly the same way I wanted, but I found an address, because every time you give somebody an address, they can pull up the history and they can tell you what exactly the permits were, right, when they were done and what they did and all of that good stuff. So I kind of got involved in understanding that piece. And then somewhere around March, when COVID hit, then the hotel started to become the industry that was hit the most.
Right.
And by that time, I was already, my wheels were churning about this whole rezoning or repurposing of real estate. And repositioning, I should say, of real estate. So I started to talk to brokers, just like I mentioned to you, started to call other brokers. And it so happened that one of them brought me a deal that was a hotel that was on two pieces of land, half of which was already zoned for multifamily, and the other half was not. So the value proposition was, if you rezoned the other piece of land to multifamily, then you could now have a whole multifamily property. Wow. That was ready to go. Now, there's a lot of nuance, because you do have to go to the city and, make sure you get permissions and all that good stuff. And that's why most people don't do it. And I don't recommend it as your first strategy. I do recommend getting into it after you've kind of honed in on one strategy, made some money, and you're figuring out how to make more, essentially, right, or how to take a little bit more risk, but to make a bigger return. The good thing about this strategy that I found was, so there are some pieces of land where you can do both.
Okay.
So you can run a hotel and you can run multifamily. So you're not rezoning at all. You're just changing the land use from running a hotel to running a multifamily. So getting all of that stuff done, and I did have consultants helping me figuring this stuff out. And then I was able to use CoStar to narrow down all the properties and all the hotels. So I pulled out all the hotels in an area,
right,
plugged in, my requirements and zoning and all that stuff, narrowed it down to like 20, gave that list to a broker in that area and said, call all of the owners of this and bring me what you have. And you can get both sides of the deal if you do. So that kind of clear criteria, yeah, makes a realtor love it, because they think you're super sophisticated, which in some ways you are, because you've done all this work to narrow it down to a small number of owners. So all they have to do is bring you something on that list and you're most likely going to buy it. So that's essentially how we got into contract on the hotel to multifamily.
So when would, in your opinion, when would that be converted to a full multifamily? Is it a couple of years from now, or?
It takes... So the change in land use is literally just 2 weeks.
Okay.
To get everything from the city, but then right, the city, you pull permits and you start actually doing the work on the properties.
Right.
And that takes about a year. And when you're completed, they will issue you certificates of occupancy for about 100 units or whatever the number of units.
Oh, are. Great! Well, listen, congratulations. I don't want to jinx you, but that's a great strategy.
Yeah.
So tell me more about your multifamily school, your academy. What does it entail? Does someone want to, if somebody wants to get in?
Yeah, so because I saw so many people wanting to get into multifamily in high cost of living areas, and because I did that myself, I found that there was a niche kind of market for teaching this stuff that goes beyond, because a lot of it is nuanced. So that goes beyond just, here's the strategy, now go execute. Mm-hmm. And people get stuck somewhere in that funnel, right? So in order to kind of shake things up, I really found that coaching is really helpful in understanding the same strategy from different angles. And because I'm a fan of modeling everything out, I model everything.
Right.
And so the coaching business came about pretty much just at the start of the pandemic. I did last year work as a realtor, and I brought all those objections from people who are wanting to invest in real estate. And I kind of solve those problems in my coaching program by helping people understand everything from, walking them through the numbers for a single family to a multifamily, walking them through the financing, all of that good stuff. So I created a program. It's about 10 modules. It runs a 3-month period, after which you have the option to still ask me questions for a year.
Okay.
So because of COVID, there's a lot of people who want to learn, and I understand that, but they may not be ready to move just yet, right?
Right.
The properties take time to buy. Properties take time to identify and do all that good stuff. So I have about a year for them to come back to me and ask questions and walk me through their deals and all of that good stuff. So that, for me, that was what I wanted when I first started and didn't have, is an extra set of eyes, an extra set of, you know, people who've done it, who I could ask questions to. And the other thing is you can ask questions to people you meet at the, you know, meetups and such. Yeah. But at some point, their time is valuable. And that's what I found too. I was happy to help people actually for free for a very long time. And what I found was it takes time to explain the same thing to like 5 different people who are wanting, and they all have the right intentions, but it really does not make sense for me to do this if I didn't charge money for it.
No, and it's time consuming on your end, and you know, and what I've heard is that people, like, you know, they take the free information and then they might not do anything with it. So all of a sudden, you know, you talk 2-3 hours, 2-3 weeks, and then like, wow, I kind of wasted my time helping someone that really didn't want to do anything. So if somebody wanted to get into the academy, what's the next best thing?
Yeah, so I do have some criteria, and I do have a sense of who typically would get the most out of my program. Typically, these are people with either full-time jobs or, you know, running a business of some kind. They typically need to come in with about $200,000 in down payment, because that's kind of where my strategy really works beautifully. Mm-hmm. Anything less than that, they are... I am willing to and open to doing like a one-on-one consult if they want to just, you know, pick my brain on what they should do differently here on out. They can go to thesrilatagroup.com, and there's more information there about the program and about how to get signed up.
Okay. Sounds good. So that's thesrilatagroup.com.
Yes.
Okay. I'll definitely put it on the show notes. Listen, Sri, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to Peer-to-Peer Real Estate. I really appreciate it. And if somebody else wants to get in contact, what's the best way besides your website?
It's my email. It's Sri@thesrilatagroup.com. I'm also on Instagram as Bay Area_Multifamily. Those are the two best spots to find me. I also have a closed Facebook group if you'd like to kind of ask me questions. It's called Bay Area Apartment Investing Mastermind.
Okay.
It's a mouthful, but happy to have you there.
No, sounds good. Well, Sri, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it, Bill. Happy to be here.
No, thank you. And we'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, everyone, that was Sri Latha from the SriLathaGroup.com. That's the SriLathaGroup.com. Sri, thank you so much for being on today's Peer-to-Peer Real Estate Show. Really, really appreciate it. Guys, when you get a chance, if you go to peer-to-peer-real-estate.com, that's peer2peerrealestate.com. Check out our past shows, our blog, and our resource page. And we are going to update the website. It's just a matter of time. So I'll definitely let you know about that. I'm excited about that. Also, if you guys please go to Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, leave a review, tell us how we can make this show better. And before I go, guys, there's a couple of more things. Do not give up on your dreams. Fight for it, guard it. Don't let anyone talk you out of it. Keep the momentum going. I really believe good things will happen. And on behalf of Peer-to-Peer Real Estate, I'm Willie Morales. Until next time, thanks, everybody, and please stay safe. Bye.